Welcome to another episode of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska. Last summer, executive producer Ryan Peterson found an online map of little free libraries in and around Fairbanks, and it piqued his curiosity, so he spent the summer trying to visit as many as he could.
How did this start? What gave you the idea?
How did it start? I have a lot of good ideas.
Today we feature four little free libraries from Fairbanks, and we learn why these people are out there sharing their love of reading with their communities. America's Farthest North Mini Libraries, up next on Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska. I'm Rob Prince, and this is Ryan Peterson.
Last summer, I was driving around my neighborhood when I noticed a little free library. I've seen these before on the internet, but never in person. A couple days later, on my way to work, I saw a second little free library. I was instantly curious. Later that evening, I hopped on my bike and rode over to the first little free library. Inside was what you would expect. Books. But there was also a couple things I hadn't expected, including a few small children's toys and a pamphlet for an organization called, conveniently enough, Little Free Library. Wow, I thought to myself, they have pamphlets. And a website. And that was my next stop, littlefreelibrary.org. On that website, I learned a couple things. First, this organization was a nationwide organization. And second, they had a map. So I did what anyone would do when looking at a map. I looked up my city, and there were 9 little free libraries marked on a map of Fairbanks. I decided over the summer I would try to visit all of them, and that's just what I did. While I was searching these libraries, it started to occur to me that the second free little library I'd seen in my neighborhood was not on the map. Another little free library a friend had told me about in her neighborhood wasn't either. I wondered just how many of these libraries there were in Fairbanks. So I posted a picture of all the libraries I'd visited till that point on a social media group for Fairbanks, and holy smokes, I was not prepared for the reaction. I received dozens of replies to my post, telling me where still more little free libraries were around town. My list, that started with the 9 mapped on the Little Free Library website, expanded to over 40. Some of the folks who responded owned little free libraries of their own, and I was lucky enough to be able to speak to some of them to find out who these people were, why they decided to build these libraries, and what all of this was all about. I first spoke to Glenn and Beth Gambrell, who invited me to come watch them replace their library with a larger one. Well, this is, I'm excited. So do you have more books now that you're going to bring down? Or
we do. We have those books, but we also have a box full of books that I had taken out. I had emptied it, hoping that I would come back down and just take it off because it was falling apart and books were getting damaged, and I didn't want that to happen. And I came back down to get it, and it was filled again.
How did this start? What gave you the idea?
How did it start? You know, I had heard about the little free libraries, and I'd always wanted one. And I think it wasn't until the pandemic that I just had a moment to just sit down and really peruse things, as we all did. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it. So originally, he was going to build me one, but then I came across that box there on sale, or it was on Marketplace. So I picked it up, I painted it, and we put it out here. I didn't know if the library would be popular, so I just wanted a little something to start off with. And it's so popular. Every single time I check it, there's a whole different bunch of books in there. So, and I frequently see people down here stopping and looking at the books or putting books in.
So have you had people come talk to you about this?
No.
Nobody? No. So you see people use it all the time, but nobody said thank you or anything like that?
Oh, actually, yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. I had one or two kids write me notes thanking me for it. And they just left it in here. And I did chat with a guy who was putting books in, and I asked him how he liked it, and he said he loved it. And so, yes, my community is very supportive.
Excellent. And how supportive is Glenn?
He's become much more supportive recently. He always tells me, this is my hobby. He has his own hobbies.
Yeah, I asked because, I asked you a question, and he just kind of laughed at one point. I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's, absolutely. Yes.
I think the question was, how did this start? And he kind of chuckled.
Yeah, well, I have a lot of good ideas. This is one of my better ideas.
Yeah. Yes.
He agrees.
Better ideas.
Tell me what you thought when she said, I want to do this. What were you thinking?
I was all for it. I mean, I know what it is. I knew what it was beforehand. I was surprised. It wasn't, it was like a lot of her ideas just kind of came out of the blue and surprised me, but not in a bad way at all. So I was like, okay, sure, whatever. It's your hobby. It's your thing. So when the other one started to fall apart is when I said, okay, I'll build this one. We'll do that.
I also spoke with Mike and Lori Mertes. As I walked up to meet the Mertes, Mike was scooping a novel off the ground.
Oh, gosh, that's not good. Kurt Vonnegut's down. I think he'll be all right.
Whose idea was this?
Shoshana Kuhn. I don't know if she's currently on city council.
She was on the city council.
Time,
she's trying to run again.
She had someone donate funds for a little library. And she came to me and asked if she could put it here because Nordale was pretty active when it was a regular ed school. And she said, you're right down the block from the elementary school and I think it'd be a good location. And I said, I got the perfect place for it right in the corner of the yard. And I said, sure. And it was a year or more later. I said, no box? And she says, I don't have anybody to build it. So that was my next project.
Yeah.
And the same neighbor, Lori. Lori and Steve, gave us this burl I used to mount it. And I kind of like took the style off my own home.
And then we used material that we had used inside of our own house. That's flooring.
These were window blinds.
Yeah.
And I just did a little routing work. This was flooring also.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then we just matched the colors to our house, to our own house, which we're going to redo in a couple years.
Leftover paint.
Yeah, we left
so
leftover paint.
So it's the same
paint.
Mauve and same blue.
Yeah.
The Mertes library really looked like a miniature version of their own home, complete with pink trim and light blue flourishes. Were there other ideas? Did you brainstorm? Or was this just immediately like, I know exactly what
this
I'm going
to
do?
What I wanted to do.
Yeah.
It's in the corner of my yard, make it look like my house, yeah. Use a bunch of
materials
that I had left over from other stuff.
Yeah. When he gave us the base, then it was kind of like, okay, well then.
Yeah, I built the box already, and I showed Steve some pictures of it. He says, I got a burl. That burl was about this tall, and I carried it over here and did my measurements. I cut that off the narrow end. It's about this long, and cut a little bit more off the top to make it flat. Figured out how to mount it. It's solid.
Well, and you put cement, so it's cemented
In
the ground.
It's this much in the ground.
So that's not going to go anywhere?
Wrapped with that bitumite to exclude water.
So it won't go anywhere.
And I did dig it and pour quick-set cement around there.
People use it all year round. The only time it's kind of bad is when
break up,
this gets water, but then we have a bunch of...
You can see.
Yeah, we have a bunch of wooden blocks that we put here so that people can still get to the little library over the water.
So you build a bridge.
Yeah, like a little bridge, yeah.
The Mertes Library was noted on the website as being in memory of Sarah Mitchell. I asked them about her. So did you know Sarah Mitchell?
Yes.
Okay, so was it your idea to dedicate it?
I thought that was a great idea when she suggested it.
And why a little library in her honor?
Sarah read a lot, and Sarah was just a really good friend, and her parents we knew a lot too, and I think it was just, she was very, very talented musically, very talented theatrically, and it just felt like the right thing to do at that point. And she lived in this area too, you know, her parents live right over there, her dad lives right over there. So we asked her dad if that was okay to do it in her memory, and he thought that was a great idea because she would tour around this neighborhood and stuff too when she was a kid and stuff. So, and her brother thought it was a great idea too. So, and then we talked to Shoshana and she said, oh my gosh, that is a, because a lot of people do know Sarah Mitchell. So it was like, people are going to know that, and I think she would like that.
Kelly McDevitt and her son Cameron met me at their library just out of town to talk about her experiences.
It's our little library. You want to tell them about it?
It's small.
And why did we do it?
Why did we do it?
To share books with our neighbors and to connect with our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we feel like we have lots of good books to share, and just letting them sit on the shelf in our house wasn't the best use of our books. So we wanted to share them with our neighbors and connect. And what do you like to do with our little library?
Walk right up, get a book, go back, maybe read a little bit, and then take a nap.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it's kind of exciting when we come out and we check it and there's new books.
How often do you check it?
Maybe like once or twice a week.
Yeah? I kind of check it every day. Just because it's still new, it's kind of fun and exciting. But the boys are out here a couple of times a week checking it. We usually slow down as we drive by to see if we can tell if there's anything new.
Whose idea was this?
So this was my idea. This was actually a birthday present from my husband to me. So I wanted to do it for a couple of years. And so this year he built it. And we just live in a really, really sweet neighborhood, and we wanted to share this with our neighbors.
Okay. So you want to do this for a while. What made it finally happen?
What made it finally happen is my husband finally built it, because he had been putting it off for a little bit. But I think we thought about doing it right after COVID, just because we had been a bit disconnected from people. So maybe that was like the initial thought, and then it just happened now. So we're definitely out from COVID, but it just happened to work out that we were able to get it going this summer.
We'll be back in a moment with more on America's Farthest North Mini Libraries with correspondent Ryan Peterson. This is Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska. I'm Rob Prince. Some of you may know that 2024 marks the 10th anniversary of the beginning of Dark Winter Nights. To celebrate, we're having a special 10th anniversary live show on Friday, May 3rd at 7 o'clock p.m. in the Centennial Hall Theater at Alaskaland, aka Pioneer Park. Because this is a much smaller venue than our normal location, there is some fear that the show will sell out quickly. If you would like to see the show, I would definitely not wait to try and buy your tickets at the door that night. Tickets will be available in advance on our website, darkwinternights.com. That's also where you can sign up for our e-newsletter and be the first to know about when tickets go on sale and other big news from Dark Winter Nights. If you aren't able to attend the live event on May 3rd, I'm happy to let you know that it will also be broadcast live and streaming on KUAC-FM, so you can listen to it anywhere in the world where there is an internet connection. There's more information at kuac.org. On top of that, KUAC-TV will be airing special half-hour broadcasts of some of our favorite Dark Winter Nights stories from the last 10 years every Saturday at 8 o'clock p.m. starting April 6th through May 4th. Thanks so much for your support of Dark Winter Nights and Alaska Storytelling while we spent the last 10 years trying to figure out how to make this show. Now here's Dark Winter Nights co-creator, executive producer, and now correspondent, Ryan Peterson, with more about America's farthest north mini libraries up here in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Frank Santora's Little Free Library is listed as the farthest north Little Free Library in the world. So I always like to start, I've done a few of these now, with kind of the basic, like whose idea was this?
My wife Brenda. She had known about the Little Free Library program, and we'd always talked about maybe putting one up, and I'm not sure, it just finally got to a point, she said, why don't you go build one? So. And we had, on the website, there's the little blurb about it. There was a tree that had gotten blown down in the storm, and so instead of cutting all of it up for firewood, we saved some to do some boards to make the library. So,
when did you build it?
Oh, I want to say 2016.
Oh, you might be the earliest.
We were early. Because when we put it up there, I have on their farthest north question mark. I mean, I couldn't find any on their maps farther north in Europe, and there wasn't the one up in Ukiagvik yet. So, and I'm actually surprised nobody in Nome has one. I mean, it would just seem a natural out there that somebody would, but they don't have one, or at least not a registered one. So,
Frank was the first person I'd spoken to who mentioned the Little Free Library organization. I asked him about his experience with them. What made you want to register it?
We wanted to be a part of the program, and it also gets you on the map so that if someone were looking, they could find you. Most of the people find us, we've got neighbors beyond, and they'll be visiting and see it and stop and look at it. And we've had people that they come back and leave books, and it's always interesting to what you find in there. I mmean, we've had the whole range of, we've had Mao's Little Red Book, we've had Mein Kampf, we've had Confucius, just the whole gambit, and then just all different kinds of, literature. So it's been fun to see what we get.
Yes, an airplane flew over while we were talking. This is real journalism, folks. As I visited more and more Little Free Libraries, I started to realize how unique not only their construction and decoration was, but also how different their contents were. One library at a church, predictably, had mostly religious books. Another by a school was filled with children's books and one copy of The Martian by Andy Weir. Other libraries had their own mixtures of novels, children's books, informational books, Alaskan trail guides, magazines, and a couple had things like toys, art supplies, DVDs, and other things I hadn't expected to find.
And look, somebody left me a little rocket gift. This wasn't here before.
That just showed up now?
It showed up yesterday, I think. What? Yeah, somebody painted a little rocket birdhouse for me. It's probably one of the kids over here. Oh, that's super cute.
The Gambrells had found a red birdhouse shaped like a rocket ship just the day before I spoke to them. The Murdas found a different but no less creative artistic donation.
Are you familiar with the little painted rocks that people leave around Fairbanks?
I am. I've seen those.
I've found one right here. Right there.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Somebody took it along, but I might paint another and stick
it
in there.
And somebody took it off.
I asked Beth Gambrell about the books she finds in her library. So how would you describe your collection? Is it curated, or is it just what happens? Is it interesting to you what kind of books populate here?
I see all kinds of things. Somebody in the neighborhood must be a midwife, because I saw several books about, having children and whatnot. And my coworker was pregnant at the time, so I grabbed a couple of those and I took it to her, and she loved them. So it, like I said, it changes all the time.
Frank and I talked about how his library's collection evolved over time as well. So do you in any way edit the collection, or is it totally organic? What comes is what comes.
Well, for the most part, what comes is what comes, except, we've got, all the kids' books that, we had over the years. We got boxes of books, so every now and then we'll go through and, here's one that'll be good for the library. Or we'll go down to the bookstore there on College Road, and I'm forgetting their name right now, but, you know, we'll buy books out of their bargain bin and that kind of thing to, you know, put in the library. So, and I've had people at work, you know I have it, you know, they'll bring me books. So.
But you don't pull anything out?
No, so far everything, I mean, even, you know, the little red book or Mein Kampf, you know, it's like, it's out there, you know, people, you need to understand what's in the world, you know, so.
The Mertes, for the most part, agreed.
If I see something really outlandish in there, I mean, I left L. Ron Hubbard in place. I wrote.
You know, I don't think we want to do that.
No, I'm not going to curate it beyond because, having things that aren't ratty and tattered.
Yeah, I mean, but I think people should have a choice of what they read.
Religious texts.
We aren't going to do like some of the school boards.
I've never
and some
seen
of the
Mein Kampf or anything. I might pull that, but. But I don't think he needs any other press.
Yeah. But I don't think that we're going to be, doing that. I don't believe that we should do that. I think everybody has their different forms of...
It's a slippery slope, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. But it is. But I don't think that we have the... I was a school teacher for 30 years, and
myself.
I just retired. And
I'm
I don't...
responsible for what
I don't believe that, you know, anyone, adults, kids, or whatever, should be banned from... reading certain books. I just don't
think
that.
If there were an old copy of Hustler tucked in there, I'd pull that too. Just
yeah, I could see that might be a line crossed.
Kelly's
Little Free Library was only a few weeks old when we talked, but she had already seen a change in its contents.
You know, we filled it up pretty full when we originally started, and I would say that like about half the books that we started with are gone and there are new books. So we haven't had to, I think everyone seems to be dropping a book off when they take one because it's just as full as when we started. And we started it about a month ago, maybe, a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
Is there anything that's not allowed in there?
You know, I don't know if we've come across that yet. Yeah. No, I think we've, I think it's all been pretty... appropriate material so far. I don't know, but I do like the idea of exchanging other things like movies or toys, things like that. That could be fun and exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You ever think about putting a video game in there, see what happens?
No.
You don't want to part with those? But see, the thing is, if you put one in there, someone might give you a different one back.
Oh, so it could be more than books.
But... somebody could just steal it.
Well, there's that.
I failed to convince Cameron, but to his credit, I saw cards and a board game, but none of the libraries I visited had any video games. As I continued to visit Little Free Libraries and talk to Little Free librarians, I started to piece together what this was all about. Sure, they all liked reading, but it seemed like there was more to it than that.
Books are like seeds. They're not doing any good unless they're planted somewhere.
Yeah, you don't have to, like, we didn't have to advertise. It's Shoshona did.
As a parent, reading was important to the McDevitts as well.
I think, you know, the kids, having kids kind of inspires us to find ways to make reading new and exciting. But I think I might have it even if I didn't have kids. I just really like the idea of connecting with our community and sharing good books. Like, I hate to see good books sitting on our shelf in our house not being read. So.
Okay. So this is, I guess, the underlying question is, like, what is this about? Community?
That's a good question. Yeah, I would say maybe community first and then book sharing second. Yeah, and getting the kids excited about reading.
Frank explained that for him, the library goes beyond the books inside it. Is there a mission, or is it just something you just like books?
Not really a mission. I mean, we like the books and stuff, and we'll, I forget the website, but, you know, there's a website that we got some, you know, patriotic books, you might say, you know, kids' workbooks, that kind of thing, about the founding fathers and those kinds. And actually, a couple of them, you know, I was reading through them, I go, I never heard of that guy. You know, he did sign the Declaration, but nobody ever hears of him. But, you know, now I know, you know, oh, okay. You know, yeah, the range of what ends up in there, it'd spark an interest in someone, you know, that you might not even have, you know, considered you know, even as maybe an avocation in the future or something, you know, because you'd never heard of it, but here's this obscure seeming book that you read and it, you know, it sparks something.
So it kind of sounds like to you that this is a lot about kind of inspiration, inspiring people, like putting something out that might mean something to them. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair to say.
By the end of the summer, I'd visited 28 free little libraries in and around town. I spoke to many little free librarians, more than I had an opportunity to record. I want to thank all of these folks who took the time to chat with me, just a regular guy who saw something I thought was interesting in my neighborhood. Thank you to the Mertes. I hope you find that mystery library you showed me on the map. The Gambrels. I hope your new library is large enough now. To Frank. Keep inspiring people. And Kelly and Cameron, somebody, please find their library and leave Cameron a Nintendo Switch game. Thank you to everyone else I talked to and everyone I heard from online. You all really took my search to a whole new level, and I couldn't have done it without you. I learned a lot this summer, a lot about building community and making real-world connections. The Little Free Library website states, "Our mission is to be a catalyst for building community, inspiring readers, and expanding book access for all." So I guess I could have just read this in the beginning, but then I would have missed out on the opportunity to meet and speak with so many people, and maybe, just maybe, participate in building community in my own way. I'll leave you with this final thought from the Mertes. Thanks for listening. Is there anything else you want to share? Or?
I think pretty much.
Anything people can do to help build community.
Yeah.
On a one-to-one, you know. I know more faces than I did before. And I like the feeling in Fairbanks when you go to the store, you see a lot of people you know. If you stop to get coffee.
And the more little libraries we have, the nicer the community is, you know, that you have. You kind of keep it nice. And we saw that in Seattle. That none of their libraries were ever destroyed. You know, so I know when you make a little library, most people keep them pretty nice. You know, they make sure that they stay nice.
I think even the ones downtown, they don't get much abuse or anything.
No. So I think people just are...
There's more people have in common than we have apart from each other. And yeah. I think at base, most people want to care about the people around them and the place they live. And anything I can do to encourage that, I do.
That was Dark Winter Nights correspondent, executive producer, and co-creator Ryan Peterson. Thanks for listening to Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, the America's Farthest North Mini Libraries episode. Pictures of the little libraries featured in this episode are on our Dark Winter Nights Facebook and Instagram pages. You can find links to those on our website, darkwinternights.com. Today's episode was edited by Ryan Peterson. Thanks for giving me a break from editing, Ryan. Story consultation by Lori Neufeld. The Dark Winter Nights executive producers are Chris Swolinski, Brittany Carnes, Robin, Ryan Peterson, and myself. Dark Winter Nights is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, and our much-anticipated 10th anniversary live event is coming up on Friday, May 3rd, at the Centennial Theater in Alaskaland. Or Pioneer Park, depending on when you move to Fairbanks. That event will be broadcast live and streaming on KUAC-FM, so you can listen to it anywhere in the world. There are more details on all of that at our website, darkwinternights.com. Remember, these are the stories we tell up here in Alaska on Dark Winter Nights. I'm Rob Prince.